call this meeting to order. This is the call to meeting for the Board of Trustees for the Palm Coast Pension Plan for the volunteers. From Stan, please, for Fred.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Peg, would you call the attendance, please?
Charles Esposito.
Here.
Timothy Wilsey.
Here.
Daniel Brizano.
Here.
John Picard.
Here.
Robert Schroeder.
Here.
We all had a chance to look at the minutes. Anybody want to make a motion to accept them as written, or you want to bring out?
I'll make a motion to accept them as written.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Scott, we might as well go to the selection of the new board or recertification of the.
You mean who has to do what? Is that?
No, interest? No. I mean all our terms expired.
Yes, they did.
Okay, so what I have here is a copy of the minutes from the city council in which they approved the appointment of myself and Dan Brizano.
Okay.
Okay. And that was approved unanimously by the board.
Okay.
And I have a copy here of the draft results of the minutes of that meeting.
Good.
If you need. Secondly, I have a letter from the president of the corporation reappointing Tim Wilsey and John Picard.
Okay, the board. That was based on a vote.
That is based on a vote within the organization.
The membership.
Yes, correct.
Of the pension plan.
Yeah, of the pension
plan. Okay, good. Well, that's
for the, right. For the board.
Those are the right answers.
Yeah. And here's a copy of the letter from the president. Making
all right.
Such appointment. That being said, the four selected members have the opportunity to select the fifth. All right, fifth member. And I spoke with our current member, Bob Schroeder, and if he's willing to accept, I'd like to nominate him for that position. Anybody?
I'll second that nomination.
I don't know if I can make that nomination.
It's all right.
But, okay. All
right.
Second.
If not, then
I'll make it.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Yeah, opposed?
Thought you were getting out, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I abstained.
All right. Well, Charlie, that was excellent. You were right on top of the whole
there. Now, saying that and where we are.
All right, wait a minute. Just one note.
Yes.
Bob's name has to, again, go to the city. He has to be approved as a council member.
Council
duty.
Council.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we took the liberty of inserting his name.
Good. Now, if we can, if that's all acceptable here, we're not ready to be sworn in today, but we can finish everything that we need to. And I think for good order, we should make the board should select then their chairman, their vice chairman, and the treasurer. Those are the three.
Actually, your operating rules say that you do it every 2 years, and you lasted it in November of 13. So I think you're good for until at least the next meeting with the current officers. You didn't have to change, so.
No.
So I think we can put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Why not now?
Well, because our operating rules say we do it every 2 years, and it's not been 2 years.
Only 2 years till November.
Right.
Mm.
Okay, fine.
All right.
So put it on the November meeting.
Okay.
Do it then. Okay?
Yeah. We'll meet right now.
And I'll be here then, so I'll remember.
November meeting. being done. Chris, you want to go into your financial?
Sure. This is through the quarter ended March 31st, 2015, of this year. Overall, we had a pretty good income quarter, just under $94,000 within the funds, primarily from the fund at the league. The
Are we totally out of that administration?
That's the way I was just going.
Oh, you were just going to say that? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
So the pressure of it all.
Just have that in the back of my mind every time I come here.
That's okay. At the very bottom, this reconciliation portion that's kind of down here are our actual listing of our accounts and account balances. Mm-hmm. And you can see the very last line there, that Fund B, that was that money that was frozen at the state. We did recoup all of our original principal back from the state. So we're 100% back on that.
Oh, okay.
The going before, and it may or may not have been signed already, but going before Governor Scott was, okay, what do we do with in this Fund B with the excess that the state has? And it was determined to distribute it based on a proportionate share of income that your investments would have received from November 2007, on and on and on, not to bore you with the details. But my guess is, my estimate is, that we probably got somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 coming to us once that is approved by the governor. And it's just waiting for the governor's approval at this point to distribute those remaining proceeds, which really represent earnings that we didn't get from the past. So as soon as I hear, you know, anything official on that, I'll pass it on. But that'll be a nice little boost.
Well, that's a penny that we get. But if we don't get it, it doesn't hurt our program at all.
Doesn't hurt our program, but it's definitely a positive that it appears we are going to get, a fairly substantial chunk.
Well, I was just looking at today's headline about the governor and the state of the budget and so on, that he's putting everybody into
But this is kind of separate from that, Charlie. This fund. The other thing is that the other two kind of smaller line items on there at the top two, the Wells Fargo Bank $418, and these are kind of backwards. But the State Pool A, which is about $13,000. Those two accounts have been closed over the last couple of weeks, and those monies have been transferred to the league. The only reason why those were open was because of this Fund B issue. Now that that's kind of been resolved and we've gotten all of our money back, that $13,608, that $418, a couple of weeks ago was transferred over to the league. So we'll have everything in one place, in one account, for the next quarterly report. There were no new retirees in the quarter that I received any applications for. The list of invoices for the board's consideration is attached, primarily actuarial and attorney's fees. In the other business section, at the end of the invoices, there's a memo that we received.
Under the invoice approval for the Fortune Force.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the annual or is that the fee to make up? What is that?
That is the, it's attached, Charlie. It's about 10 pages in. This is the actual invoice here. That's for the actuarial work, the annual valuation work,
okay.
The form that has to go with the state report, the normal fees for attendance at our last workshop, and then all of the new accounting jazz that these guys are doing for us that we talked about.
It's much bigger than prior years, primarily because of the new GASB reporting.
Yeah.
Those are bigger bills, and that my attendance at that workshop was a one-time deal.
Right,
that's why that bill looks pretty big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's in line with what we expected.
You have no problem?
No. It's what we expected. Okay. The next page in your packet after that Foster and Foster bill is actually a copy of the email. The question had come up, and through Scott and Ice Miller, was basically for the share plan portions for the retirees, are they able to roll these over or not? That was kind of the question that we had, and the answer was, Basically, no. So I just included that memo as a reminder, because that was a question as of the end of the last board meeting, was could people roll these into IRAs if they wanted to? And the answer was anything. If the money comes out, it's taxable. Basically, in short.
The question that was left open then was, since that can't happen, can they defer payment on that?
No.
They have to take it.
It's going to hit, when he finishes those calculations, everybody's going to get their money.
Right, and what?
They're going to get as much money as they can for that given year.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they're going to get their allocation.
And did you confirm that it's just going to take 2 years to pay this for a lot?
Yeah, it I actually had an analyst work it up, and I'm reviewing it right now.
Yeah.
And there are rollovers for a number of participants.
Well, let's not use that term. Huh?
Oh, okay. Now, how about carryovers?
Yeah,
carryovers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe up to three years. I think 3 years on the outside.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just depends on it's.
All right, you're working on that.
Well, we all know the maximum that you can get from the defined benefit, the normal check you get, and any annual allocation from the share is $3,000 times your years of credited service. So we have that max. We'll look at your credit service times 3,000 and say that's the max you can get. We subtract off the annual amount that you've been getting since you've been retired, and whatever's left over is the maximum you can get from the share. So we'll pay that out, and if there's anything left over, we'll put on the sheet, this carries over to the next year, and we'll do it again until everything that's due to the retirees is paid out.
Yeah, well, you get a $780 reduction each month. Each year, because the 65 times whatever says it.
Yeah, 65 times 12 times. But it's clear that all the current retirees, they're going to get everything that they're due according to the share language.
Okay.
It's just that we all understand it can't get all paid out in the first year because of that limitation, like a 457 type of a limitation under IRS rules.
Right.
Okay.
The when we talked with Paul from the league, basically what their plan was once they get these official figures, that they would send a packet out to each of the retirees that says, "Hey, this is what you're getting. Confirm, you know, your tax information. You know, how you want this taxed." That they would actually get a reach out to them with a letter that says, "Here's your share plan portion that you're eligible to get this year. Tell us how you want it taxed." You know, kind of thing.
Who comes up with that first one? Doug?
Well, Doug comes up with the amounts, and then the league will come up with the letter.
Yeah. Okay.
And Paul said he would share.
But he will give them the amount for you.
Yes.
Individuals,
yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And when do you think we are with respect to that?
I think within 2 weeks we'll have it all reviewed and polished up and sent out.
And then where the league had said where it gets a little dicey is that they're going to wait to hear back from the retiree on filling out that packet. And if that retiree drags their feet, that's really the only way that there's any deferral kind of thing. He did say that sometimes that happens that they either have a hard time finding the person because they've moved, you know, and they're not where they used to be anymore, or they purposely just don't return the paperwork. So he said from a practical standpoint, that does happen.
When do they do that?
They continue to try to get a hold of them, you know, until they are able to get that, you know, yes, send it here to this address.
So is that requiring an amended filing, or is that just deferred to a following year?
I want all this done before we get our state money next year, because then we have another allocation.
Right.
So we want to get the first round of this all done before we have to deal with next year's allocation.
I know some people are talking about, you know, can I defer it? Can I not defer it? I mean, the answer really is no.
Right.
And I
this
really...
This is a real problem. You're trying to give people money and they don't want it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a problem. I used to deal with it.
You'll stand in line first, right? So I find it hard to believe, other than maybe a couple people who might be out of touch these days, that we have a hard time finding.
Hopefully not deceased.
Hopefully not deceased.
We can't find family, you know.
Right. But other than maybe we're, you know, the person's moved to South America. We have
people who have done that. And I think it's the retired group who
right,
the
that's
biggest
the
problem in that.
Chris, will the letter also give the retiree the calculation as to how they came up with the number?
The actual, I'm assuming the calculation sheets are going to come from Doug. That'll like he, you know how he normally produces each year. Hey, this is you're this vested, and this is what this means. That this will be in addition to that normal paperwork that we would get.
We'll have one big spreadsheet, so you can have the high level overview everybody at once, and how we got from A to B. But then we'll have the individual sheets that reconcile.
Yeah, well, I guess my question is, will the individual sheets come with the notification to each retiree so they know how the money was calculated?
I would think that Lincoln Cities would make sense.
Not only that, if you've got retirees that have a carryover, they would want to know that carryover.
They would have that sheet,
yeah,
carry
yeah,
over
exactly.
The next fiscal year.
So they'll know next year they're going to get a check, and maybe even a third year they're going to get a check. Some of them will only get it 1 year.
Right.
Yeah.
So I really think the reality is, you know, when you're talking about money, I find it hard to believe anyone's going to leave it on the table. And if we can find the people, I don't think it'll take them long to put their John Hancock on a piece of paper and get it back to us.
Well, haven't we been writing checks to these people every month?
Well, they're EFT. A lot of them are electronic transfers.
But they got to get a tax. They got to get tax paperwork and what have you every year.
Yeah.
Right, but that was that last time we did that, you know, people could move between that time frame, and we don't know. Listen, I'm not saying people are MIA. I'm just saying the likelihood is that we'll probably have a few people that have moved or changed addresses. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast.
So those are the anomalies. It's not a standard.
Right. So that was that, and then the valuation report is why this is so thick. Doug really outdid himself this year and voluminous paper, but it's all
$5,000 a page.
Yes, it is. And I just want to remind the board again that a lot of what's in here, past the normal, say 10 or 15 pages, is all the new requirements that the Government Accounting Standards Board has put on pension plans for disclosure and inclusion in the city's financial statements. So that's really what basically at least half of this report is all
somewhere
about.
Somewhere in here, we just got a notice from Brinkman, I guess it was, on changes of the audit process.
That's something different, Charlie.
That's in here. That's my question.
It's not necessarily in here, but I was hoping Doug could talk to us about those changes that just came through.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Good.
And that's basically all I have in a nutshell.
Anybody got any questions?
You want to make a motion to pay the invoices?
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to pay the invoices listing.
Yep.
One second.
We got a motion, we got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. In addition to that, we accept the financial report as written. Any problems with that? Anybody have any questions? Motion to accept.
Motion to accept the financial report.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. At this point, I think we go into Doug or Scott. Do you want to
put
the
report,
please? Doug, you want to pick up from here?
Yeah. All right. Let's jump to page 5. It's the same story you hear about every year from me. City's contribution remains at zero. The plant had favorable experience this last year, and we all know the routine now. I probably know it by heart, right, what the two sources of favorable experience are. Good investment returns and high turnover.
Yes,
correct. Last year we had 45 volunteers in the plan, 13 left. And part of the reason the costs are even cheaper this year is that 13 were not rehired. You know, there weren't 13 new hires, so there's actually fewer members, fewer volunteers in the plan. Yeah, the last year was 45, it's down to 36 now. So if you look at page 5, the total required contribution dropped from 127,000 to 117,000. And of course, we all know that the frozen state money, that 144,000, still more than covers it.
And that doesn't get adjusted or changed. That frozen amount stays the same.
Right. The amount that's actually being received every year is closer to 350,000 or more, or a little more. And as we know, that's where we are today with the share plan, that over 300,000 a year has just been building up, building up, building up, and now it's to the point of about $1.5 million. But the 144,000 was established actuarially when this plan started up under rules at that time, and so that's where it remains, and that continues to cover the cost of the plan.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that 144,000 still more than covers the big administrative expense from this last year with all of the legal work to get the share plan going, get the questions answered. The state money still covers that. Okay, so the city still has a.
So we have a truly just looking at the frozen amount. With that, we still have an excess account.
It
doesn't get translated into the overall excess, but there's excess within the operating budget
It continues to add reserves to the plan in case there happens to be future adverse experience with the market downturn, mm-hmm. or if for some reason turnover just really goes low at some point. You can see the differential. The city and state contribution for the current year is 127,000. That's the left column. And that's no different than when I was here last year at this time. But the state money, that 144, see, mm-hmm. the difference is 17,000, right? Mm-hmm. More or less. We'll look at the difference for next fiscal year. That's 27,000. So that frozen state money is actually building up reserves in the fund. Those are monies that do not go to the share plan that are being invested and will offset any adverse experience that might occur in the future.
Oh, yeah, or anything else that we might have to do to support the program, like an ice miller type thing.
Right.
You know, not.
No more than Charlie.
You know what? I think within very few years you're going to face the same thing again. The way it's growing. Well, if there's no change, then we're doing $350,000 a year, mm-hmm. right? So you're accumulating about $150,000 a year in excess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
and we left 20% in there. From the $1.5 million, we're only taking $1.2 million out for this year, rough numbers.
Yeah.
Which is leaving us $300,000 in there while we're trying to clear it.
Let's talk about that reserve. Let's jump over to page 8 at the bottom under liabilities. It's called excess state monies reserve.
Yeah.
We've always held that as a reserve liability. All of the state monies received are in assets. They're all there. But because the city can only use the $144,000, we've built up that excess and hold it as an offsetting liability for extra benefits. You can see that it's grown to that $1,505,000. Next year at this time, when I do the next report, I'm going to add a line. I'm basically splitting that reserve into two parts. The reserve piece for the called state monies reserve will be 20% of that $1.5 million. So it will essentially be about $300,000. We'll hold that back. And the other 80%, the $1.2 million, goes to the share, the part that we're working up right now. So next year at this time, when this transfers over to the right-hand column, I'm essentially splitting up that 1.5 into two pieces that add up to the 1.5. Okay. Going forward, the state money's reserve will remain absolutely at that 300,000 or so with no changes, no interest credited to it. But the share plan will grow over time with state monies and with interest and also debited with outflows from members who receive the payments.
Right, it'll get allocated or a portion of it will be allocated to the share accounts.
Yes.
But, of course, it won't go anywhere until somebody actually retires.
Right.
Right, those amounts allocated to the share accounts will just sit there as a growing one.
So that money will stay in assets and will stay in liabilities until somebody receives a distribution. Then that liability piece flows out and the asset piece flows out and they cancel each other. So that's how we're going to be working with that 1.5 million in reserve going forward. It'll be broken up into two pieces, state money's reserve and share plan. Since we're on this page, you still have prior...
You're doing that split up to compensate for or to deal with the 20% reserve we're going to continually hold for the reserve amount. Is this okay with you?
Well, we kind of have to.
I'm not pretending that I understand all of this.
Yeah, no, I'm good with it. Yeah.
You and Bob, you have no problem with it either, right?
No.
Okay.
If you look under Section B, we still have prior investment gains that are not yet recognized because we use a four-year smoothing. And the difference is between the actual and the market value.
Yeah.
Page 8.
Yeah. Okay.
Section B. Mm-hmm. Take the difference there. It's a little over $200,000. So those are gains yet to be recognized in the plan. That'll just continue to make the unfunded liability even more negative. Meaning credit to the city. The only other place I really need to cover in this report is, as Chris mentioned, it's a much thicker report because we have the new governmental accounting. Jump to page 33. This is the only part of the new governmental accounting that I'm going to cover for this meeting, and that's because your job as trustees is for funding the plan. For picking methods and assumptions to properly fund the plan. This section of the report in the back is accounting. This is what the auditors use. This is what goes into the CAPR.
What page are you on, Doug? I'm sorry.
Page 33. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
But this is the page that everybody wants to know. It's what's our quote-unquote unfunded liability? You know, what goes on to the balance sheet? Under new governmental accounting, the unfunded liability is no longer just a footnote. It goes onto the city's balance sheet. And the good news of this plan, as I've mentioned the last couple of years, is we've been talking about New GASB, is this plan is an asset to the city. The unfunded liability is negative. And if you look at the top, that credit is that $904,000 in parentheses. So there's, in other words, there's more money in the bank, fair market value of assets, than there are liabilities in the plan. That liability is that $2.9 million you see. That's our opinion as the actuary of what you would need to invest today to pay for checks in the future based on current service. You know, the $65 per month times years of service. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's active in the plan
is that
has
based on the 7.5% earnings?
Yes.
For the
765.
765.
Yep. It's that $2.9 million is what our opinion is to invest at 7.65% net of fees, given the life expectancy in this plan, the assumption for life expectancy.
And we're saying that using today is the standard and where we are with respect to that interest rate, that's somewhere around 9%, I think.
Well, that's what you got us last year.
Yeah, Trump's
in. Yeah. That 2.9 projects 7.65 into the future is the assumption.
Okay.
But the 9% that you actually got is reflected in that $3.8 million. There's a new name. If you're writing on the report, it's really just asset value. It's the money in the bank. In GASB terms, It's called planned fiduciary net position. That's just your market value of assets. So 2.9 million in liabilities, 3.8 in the bank. That means you're over 100% funded, you're 131%. And the city gets to put onto its balance sheet a $904,000 credit to offset other liabilities the city has.
How much of that did the Board of Trustees get being such a good option?
Well, 80% of 1.5 million.
Checks in the mail. Checks in the mail.
Too bad.
Not good.
Not for the record.
Charlie, you get to pay for this report. Yeah, okay. That's what you get.
As far as I understand, it's donuts and coffee four times a year. So.
I was hoping for a property tax break.
That's it. I'll answer other questions you have, but that's...
Getting back to what I had mentioned to Chris before, this document that we got not long ago from Brinkman...
Was that the administrative rule? It's the rule for 534, Doug. I'm sure that's what he's talking about.
1664.
Yeah, there's a few new requirements that kind of came up.
Well, if you approve the report today, we have 60 days to submit that additional information.
You've got that under control, don't you?
Okay.
Yep. We don't have to worry about that.
Nope.
Well, you guys should vote to approve the report, though.
He'll take care of that requirement that's identified in that.
And you're satisfied with the process.
Yep.
Okay. And so your presentation on this is complete, unless there's some questions.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Chris, you have any questions?
The only one I want to just, with some of those changes, I just want to confirm. I know one of them was to make sure that the actuarial reports are out on the city website.
Actually, that's the 534 information that he's going to send up there, and then I guess you provide them with the information to put on their website too, right?
Yep. Well, it's really the same thing. I mean, it's all part of our. We'll send it to the state, but we send one to the board, which will be you, Chris, and that is in a format that you'll just have to give the IT folks to upload.
Okay. Because right now what we did, we've kind of had a, I just want to throw this out there, we have an ongoing open government process with finance, and we have a whole new finance department page and disclosure page, and we have out there right now, I think last three years of actuarial reports for anybody that wants to see them, have access to them, or cares to read them. They're out on the website. What we typically find is that there's more and more requirements to put this stuff out there, but absolutely nobody clicks on them.
I was going to ask you how many hits you have on that portion of the webpage.
If you eliminated the ones where I used it for reference, not many. So,
but that makes sense to put it there. So
right. So. Just as an FYI to the board, if anybody wants to see the actuarial reports, there's going to be three running years of them on the city website for anybody to look at. All of this information that's as Doug had mentioned, that's pretty much all the information that's in the report winds up in our audited financial statements in one form or another. Those have always been on the website. So if there's ever any questions about, how come none of this is disclosed, it's always been out there. In one form or another.
Speaking of audit, that's the audit that we use to satisfy the requirements of this plan?
Yes.
The audit that you get? Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Anybody else have any questions? John?
I was just observing, Charlie, on page 20 the four-year smoothing that Doug uses. And, our four-year average was 8.95%, which obviously was partially responsible for whatever gain we had. But you can see what we're dropping off. We drop off the 2011, which was 1.11%. And assuming we add something close to 8 or something, 7 or 8 this year, that means our four-year average is going to be even better next year.
So you saw something said was about 9%, 9.7%.
It was in here. That was the actual return for the last year.
Yeah,
right. Last year's actual return. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so another 400 or another 200,000 yet to be credited against the unfunded for the prior investigations.
I think you're right. I think in another couple of years, we're going to be looking at another $1 million amount there and scratching our heads saying, geez, we had that same problem we had 4 years
ago. Not $1 million. Can we stay under $1 million?
That seems like a lot to have to sit there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Doug, you have nothing else to add? Nobody else has any questions? Somebody make a motion to accept the...
I'll make a motion to accept the actual report. Okay.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Before we leave the actual report, no comments on it, but just kind of a thought. You know, is there while Scott and Doug is here, how often should we revisit the rate of return that the board has determined? I mean, should we do that every year, every 2 years? I mean, I know it's something, you know, it's an important key component of the actuary report. We did it a couple of years ago when we talked to Paul and got the information to Paul that said that their projected long-term rate of return on the portfolio we were in was 7.65%. That's where that number had come from.
And I don't think they've changed either.
And it may not have. Yeah, it may not have. And I just don't know from a general rule, should we check in with him every year, every other year, and just see if anything has changed?
Check in with who? I'm sorry.
With the league and see if their long-term rate of return on our portfolio, their projections have changed.
I think it's a good idea. There's still room in your plan, I think, especially with that $200,000 flowing in the next couple of years, to lower the assumption and still not have any requirement from the city.
Right.
So I think it would be a good idea to reach out to Paul and
just confirm where they are.
Yeah, do you guys still have an opinion of 7.65 as the best estimate?
Okay.
And on an annual basis, you think? Well, that's your question.
Remember when we approved the actual evaluation, I was going to bring it up today, that little drill that the state has us do to declare an expected rate of investment return for the next year, the next 7 years, and the long term. And we usually base that on the recommendation from the investment people, the league. And I think they're currently that program, we're in the 60-40, I think, right? 60 equity. Yeah. I think that their recommendation for that portfolio is still that 7.65%. So they're looking at that because,
right,
remember, they kind of dovetail with the actuaries, and they have another actuary they work with out of Atlanta, and they come up with that. Yeah, because it's an overall portfolio and everybody's in 60-40, is invested the same way. So they come up with that and make that recommendation and review it regularly. So I think that's happening. Even if we're not specifically looking at it, they're specifically looking at it.
Well, we,
but it's certainly a question we can ask.
Right.
We ran into this just a couple of years ago, didn't we? When we were, this program started at an 8% anticipated rate,
right,
and we won't get anywhere near that. And
right,
so we dropped down to, I forget what it is, 7 point.
7.65.
And where we still are. But I think we kind of got nudged on that periodically. We maybe did nothing about it, but we're aware of it.
But, you know, while frankly that actuarial assumption is important in 99% of our plans, it is. And you help me out here, Doug, but I think it's not as important here.
Right.
Because the only thing it's going to do here is it's going to increase the required contribution, but not increase it to the point where the city has to put in money. But if you reduce it, you increase the likelihood of having an actuarial gain, which has the effect of reducing the contribution. So, I mean, if all you're doing is moving numbers around in the actuarial valuation, the ultimate impact in dollars is not really going to change.
Right. I'm just thinking more from a, you know, from a public perspective standpoint,
yeah,
because, you know, the to say that, you know, yes, the board looks at that every year, confirms with our investment advisor that's still the long-term rate of return that we're using, you know, and that we're being conservative about it. I think that part of it is really where I'm coming from.
Part of fiduciary responsibility.
Exactly. We really don't have a standard, okay, every March meeting, we're going to reach out to Paul and say, okay, what's the latest kind of thing? And I think it makes sense to do that.
I like Chris's idea because a real sharp anti-DB type person doesn't seem to be really any around here when the city's at zero every year. But they might say, well, of course the city's at zero. You're using a very unrealistic assumption. Mm-hmm. And if you could lower it and show them it's still zero, that would take the potential wind out of their sails.
Right. But the 7.65, as compared to our other plans,
well, comparatively,
is probably on the lower side.
I mean, yeah, it's about the middle of the road right now. Yeah. I mean, I have a couple of plans where one in particular, it's a very wealthy location, and they just hammered the board. It's a pretty low contribution requirement. They just hammered the board to get that assumption down. It's not on the 6.25. It's an open plan. And some people in the community still say it's too high. And these are sharp investment folks who have retired and have done very well for themselves. And they look at anything above 6 as crazy. Doesn't seem like you have any of those around here, or at least they're fairly quiet. But at any point, somebody can come up and say, you know, some insurance guy or some investment guy who's just, you know, hell-bent on looking at these plans and saying, of course you have no requirement. There's no way you're going to get 7.5 long-term.
Right, and we don't want to be put in a position where someone goes to the city council and says, well, the last time they looked at that rate of return was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not change.
We declare, like I just said, we do this drill to declare an expected rate of investment return for the next year, the next several years, or long term. We do that every year after we approve the actuarial evaluation. And I was going to bring it up to do it again this year. Mm-hmm. So all we're doing is confirming that that's a reasonable expectation going forward. So somebody couldn't say we only look at it every 3 years.
But in terms of, well, what are you basing that on?
Based on the recommendation of the investment people from the League of Cities.
And that's all I'm saying is that we make sure we confirm, we physically put in the minutes that we have talked to the League and confirmed that this is the rate of return.
Well, is this something that we need to make a motion on?
Yes, you do. To declare the expected rate of investment return for the next year or 7 years. Right after you do the actual evaluation. Now, if you want to postpone that till the next meeting, get with Paul to confirm the 7.65 is correct, and then do the motion at the next meeting to basically say, based upon the advice of our investment folks, that we hereby declare that we expect to get a 7.65% investment return for the next year, the next several years, and the long term thereafter. And then you have to do a letter. Mm-hmm. We have a form letter, pension letter number one, I think it is, that goes to the state, it goes to the city, and goes to the actuary. And that's the requirement in the state statute. So it forces you to look at, you know, at least think about it every year when you improve the actual evaluation. So you're not going to, somebody couldn't say, oh, they never even look at that. Not true.
Right. But if, you know, I would suggest maybe we do what Scott said at the next meeting, you know, we call Paul in the meantime and confirm, get him to confirm that number for us, and then the board take action on it at the next meeting.
Does the League provide us with a document that shows what the portfolio looks like and what the asset allocation is?
Yeah, they have all of that.
Every month.
They do. That's something that they give to us regularly, or we have to ask for it?
Yeah, we get it
every month.
We get it every month.
It's in the monthly newsletter. They have a cover letter that comes with the statement. Mm-hmm. And it says this is the allocation, you know, what you're in and the percentage allocation. They don't tell us there, hey, our expected long-term rate of return is this.
Right.
They don't do that. They actually, when they were here talking about it, they actually hire a third-party analyst to kind of do that work for them to say, okay, based on this mix, this is what the long-term
rate is. And that's in the newsletter that comes with it.
That part, I don't think, I've never seen that in a newsletter.
It would be interesting to see what the portfolio looks like and how it's allocated, what's in it, what's being invested in. Yeah. I mean, at 7 or 8%, any individual would like to get in on that to see what they're investing in.
Sure, sure. But they do.
Sometimes you can have a heart attack.
Well, I've had those heart attacks.
They do provide that. If you add, you know, that additional level of detail, if you ask for them,
it's
certainly ask for.
You can drill into it.
Don't they give you the web page to go
look at
stuff? Yeah, I mean, you should be having that every quarter and have the opportunity to look at it.
You can roll into it.
Yeah. And like I said, It's different here because, you know, a lot of our plants have separate managers and consultants and what have you, and they're all different. But with the league, if you're in the 60-40 portfolio, you have the same investments that every other client that they have that's in a 60-40 portfolio. So that's why I know that if their recommendation is 7.65 for you, it's going to be 7.65 for all those people that are in the 60-40 based on the way that portfolio is set up. So, and that's, like I said, that's 7.65 is what the other, I have others who have the league who are in the 60-40, and that's what they're saying. So yeah. Confirm it and then do it at the next meeting. But that does need to be done at the next meeting.
Okay.
All right, we'll leave it at that point then. We'll program this for the next... I guess you're up.
I'm up.
You're up.
All right. Well, let me get some of the administrative stuff out of the way first. A reminder, you should be getting the financial disclosure form in the mail, the Form 1. That is due on July the 1st. All right, so when you get it, please fill it out. If you don't get it in the mail, you still have to file it, okay? So you can go to the commission on myflorida.com and the Commission on Ethics, and you can actually fill out the form there and then, you know, put in your information and then print it out. You have to mail it in or take it into the supervisor of elections. You can't file it online, but you can fill it out online. So please be sure to do that. Remember, I'm not here again until November. So beginning September 1st, if you haven't filed the form, it starts a $25 day fine up to $1,200. And that comes out of your checkbook if you haven't filed the form. So please be sure to fill it out. Maybe somebody can follow up with everybody and make sure.
And just as a reminder, we had one of our trustees fail to do that for a couple of years, and they warned him, and they really pounded him. And there was nothing we could do. He got pounded for thousands, thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they don't fool around with
that. Is that a different form than what the city sends us to, that we have to fill out yearly?
It's probably the same one, yeah. Right,
a lot of times
the city clerks
keep up with that, and they try to remind them.
Well, what you can do is get down to the supervisor's office, and even ask to see what your last one was. And if nothing's changed, you just copy and change the dates on
it. But I seem to remember filling it out recently.
Last year.
Yeah, about.
You do it every year.
It's a year. Yeah.
Time flies.
I guess.
Time flies. It's once a year. Okay.
Sorry, what was the name of the form again?
Yeah, it's Form 1, the Financial Disclosure Form.
It's where they're making sure, basically, that you don't have any financial interests, you know, conflicting financial interests.
Yeah, I know what the form is. For some reason,
filing the form is more important than what it says, as far as I can see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite frankly. All right, everybody good with that?
Yeah.
All right. Next, as you know, we got our ordinance passed with the share plan in it, and the summary plan description, that's a little booklet we do that describes our plan and all the provisions of the plan. We did that last November, okay? We're only required to do it every 2 years. But technically what the statute says is that you do it every 2 years unless you have a material change in your plan in the interim, and then you're supposed to do it more often. It seems to me that this share plan and this new program may be material enough that we probably ought to update that summary plan description so that the membership knows, you know, has an explanation, if you will, of the share plan. And, of course, any new people that you bring on board, you can give them a copy of that. So if that makes sense to you,
sure does. Maybe you change the plan
considerably. So if y'all want to do a motion to authorize me to update the SPE, then I will do that.
We got enough money in there?
Yes.
We just paid Doug's. I'll make a motion to update the SPE.
I'll second.
I thought it was free.
The SPD is when you give it out. Yeah. Not for me. Boy, you guys are paying everybody else. You look at my bills and they're the least, and you're busting my chops this morning. I can't believe this.
Well, you're the only attorney here. We've got to take it out on somebody.
I take it on the chin for everybody, I guess. All right. Okay, next item. I sent over a memo, and I think I probably sent it to maybe Charlie or maybe to you, Chris, the memo regarding the public records exception. By way of explanation, y'all are probably aware that, you know, we're a public body, and so all of the records that we create are public records, and the general rule in Florida is that all public records are available for public disclosure. People can come in and look at them, make copies of them whenever they want. All right. However, there are some exemptions from that general rule, and one of the exemptions is the personal information of police officers and firefighters. So, you know, your home telephone number and your, where your kids go to school and where your wife works, your address, all that information is an exemption from the public records.
Did we just do
that? What? I don't know. I'm just explaining it. I don't think I've gotten a copy of it, so that's why I'm explaining it. And, but I'll just finish the explanation,
okay,
and then if you've already done it, I need to get a copy.
Okay.
So anyway, we have this exemption for the private information of firefighters, but there's an exception to the exemption. Okay, stay with me. An exception to the exemption. And the exception to the exemption is that information, that private information that's exempt from public disclosure, that exemption is when it's in the hands of the employer, the city, okay? But if that same information is in the hands of a custodian of the information other than the city, then it is not exempt from public disclosure unless the individual firefighter requests that you maintain it as confidential, which is kind of a pain in the neck to do, to get everybody to sign a piece of paper. Or the employer, the city, and the city is the sponsor of this plan, so unless the city requests that that information be maintained as confidential. So we have a form in our forms package that essentially is designed to be signed by the city, whereby the city says, pension board, we hereby request that you maintain the confidentiality of that information.
You so sent us that.
I did send it, and maybe you already done it
to the city. And
and he's shaking his head, so... Yeah.
I think it's done in file, but I'll pull it out, copy it, I'll send you, and I'll circulate it to you.
And that way, if somebody were to come to the pension board and say, hey, I want to see so-and-so's personal information, if we didn't have that piece of paper, technically we'd have to give them that information, and we don't have to do that. So we're just kind of filling a loophole in the state statute, okay? So we'll get that taken care of. Let's see. The next item is legislation. Legislation is not going to have too much effect on you. There were a couple of bills that were passed. You probably know that the House decided to take an early exit this year, but before they left, both the House and the Senate passed two bills that have potential impact on police officer and firefighter pension plans. The first one, which will impact us, but not much. It'll change the numbers a little bit, but probably not change the city's requirement. But what this bill does, and by the way, both of these bills that I'm just going to describe to you have been formally sent to the governor, I think, last Friday, and they're sitting on his desk. So at this point, one of three things has to happen. Number one, he can, of course, sign the bills into law. Number two, if he does nothing for 2 weeks, then the bill will become law without his signature. And, of course, his third option is to veto the bill. Okay, so that's kind of where we are with respect to these two bills. The first bill is a bill that will require us going forward, instead of using the actuarial or the mortality table that Doug uses currently in our actuarial evaluation, we will have to change and use the mortality table that the Florida retirement system uses. And in doing that, Doug has told me and other actuaries that basically that's a more conservative table. Conservative meaning that the expectation in that table is that people will live longer than the table that we're currently using. Well, of course, if we're assuming people will live longer, what's the effect? It has the potential for increasing costs. Now, I don't think it's going to increase costs to the point, I'll put words in Doug's mouth, to the point where it's going to require any contributions from the city. Certainly not that kind of an impact.
I agree.
But it will have, the numbers will change a little bit as a result of that. So anyway, that's the first bill. The second bill also will not really have any impact on you. Because obviously you're a volunteer plan, so you don't have a multiplier. The bill is a bill that changes the methodology for using the additional state money. What it provides, what it provides is that if the employee group and the city agree to the way in which the state money is going to be used, then it can be used in that fashion. Okay, and that's really what we've done here. The city, we've done the share plan, and the city has agreed to it, and we've got it in place. All right. What this bill also says is, if there is no mutual agreement, then the money that's available to be allocated goes to the defined benefit plan. Part of it goes to the defined benefit plan, which we have, the defined benefit plan, and part of the money also goes into a defined contribution plan, which needs to be put into the plan by October 1st of this year. Well, we already have a defined, the share plan meets that requirement. So that's what I'm saying. This legislation, whether it gets adopted or doesn't get adopted, is really not going to have any impact on us. We're really already doing
what we need. How did the share plan define benefit?
Defined contribution.
Contribution. Did I say benefit?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Defined contribution. I'm sorry. Yeah. So going forward, all the police and fire plans in the state are going to have a defined contribution component in the plan, probably similar to the share plan, not maybe as complicated as the one we have, but similar to the one we have, and everybody's going to have that. Whether it gets funded or not, believe it or not, even if you're not going to put any money into it, you have to have the shell, if you will, in the plan. So obviously, I know you're pleased to know that we'll be working very hard and earning a good fee for putting all of us into the plans around the
state.
And Doug will be doing the actuarial work, so it's we'll all be busy. We'll all be busy.
Doug's already busy for life, yeah. Just on the police chief.
Can you remember that when we weren't?
Yeah.
Just going back a little bit on that, this agreement between the organization and the city. It's not, in my experience, or our experience anyway, it has not been an easy thing. In the interim, in there, we had to go to the IRS and spend, I think, how many tens of thousands of dollars in order to get something that would allow the city and us to make accommodations to one another and make both sides happy.
Well, the situation here is obviously, this is a one-time situation that you have here.
But what I'm saying is, something like that comes up, we were precluded from using money in the excess reserve to resolve that problem. So we had to use the funds that could have, but didn't, made the city liable for some expense. I guess the question is it still true that we can't use the reserve fund to develop information to be able to accommodate this agreement between the city and the organization?
I would have had a quick yes, that's true, but frankly now the legislation, I still don't think that it's going to allow the money to be used for administration or what have you, but by the same token, indirectly, it is possible to have an agreement between the employee group and the city to allow the city to use a portion or a large portion or even all of the state money to fund the plan. And if you have administrative expenses that are required to be paid, then indirectly you're using the state money to pay those expenses. And we really did that here. We used the state money here to pay the expenses. The city didn't pay for it.
Yeah, but we didn't use the excess reserve money.
No, but you used...
We couldn't use the excess...
No, right, money. But you used the annual money. The state money was used to pay all the expenses of doing
it. Right. And we had questions about whether or not we were going to get to the point where there wasn't going to be enough money. Yet. All I'm doing is going hypothetically.
Yeah, this is a very special, isolated situation here. We don't have any of these issues that we're talking about here anyplace else.
The easiest way to go about this first, if we get to a point where, the city has a requirement, is to not first go to the reserve. That's a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. We've got annual state monies that you just wouldn't allocate to the share. You can say, we'll raise the 144 up to whatever's negotiated. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest route. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the reserve as a backup if you need it. That's a little more complicated to get to.
Now, maybe we're going a little further than
that. Sounds like
go on that.
We've got two safeguards.
Just the way they are.
We've got two safeguards.
Oh yeah, everything is fine right now. But what Doug is saying is that 144. Mm-hmm. That's the state money, the frozen amount that can be used to fund the plan. Right now, that amount is enough to fully fund the plan, right? And if we got to the point where that 144 wasn't enough to fund the plan, mm-hmm. we, the employee group and the city, could agree to raise that 144, or maybe up to 200,000.
Right.
Then it would fully, the state money annually would fully cover the cost of the plan. So, I mean, we're able to do that, and yeah. you know, we can pretty well insulate the city from having to make any contributions.
And I really think state monies typically match the size of the community. If the community grows, the state money grows. So in the future, if we find that, hey, the fire department needs to hire more and more volunteers because the area is growing, that means there's probably more insurance money being collected, which means the state monies are going up each year. So it should match. Right now, there's a huge buffer. The cost of this plan actuarially is, say, $120,000, but we're getting $320,000 in state monies every year, or even more.
Yeah.
Well, let's say at some point this community doubles, and you need a lot more volunteers, and the cost of the plan goes to $200,000. Well, my guess is the state monies coming in each year won't be at $300,000 or $350,000. It might be at $500,000 or $600,000 because of the extra insurance premiums being collected. Mm-hmm. I think there's always going to be that buffer for volunteer plans are very cheap.
Let me ask a question on that. Since that that 350 or whatever we have is a function of the primary, it's two allotments to us. It comes in two pieces, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
One is fixed. The first one is fixed.
Yeah.
The second one is a percentage of the money that other communities are contributing to but are not using. So what we're doing is giving money back to the state, and then the state takes this extra pot supplemental and says, okay, this is what we got left, and makes a distribution to everybody. So if more communities said, hey, I want to be a party to this here, there wouldn't be that much in that supplemental fund, and what we could get could be diminished.
Well, you're always guaranteed 50%.
Well, yes, but you know,
I think that's really what you're getting for the most part.
It has to be, because that they're giving us 50% of the paid
right. You don't
firefighters.
have any paid firefighters in this plan.
No.
But we're getting 50% of the non FRS full time firefighters. That's the money that we're getting. So we're only getting 50% of the money that they're actually collecting for this city,
yeah. Which is still more than.
Yeah, well, but that doesn't change the part that I'm talking about. The supplemental is not predictable. That's all I can say.
Right. Actually,
the first part is, but the second part isn't.
The extra 50% goes into the supplemental trust. What they use that supplemental trust for is if full-time firefighters, if they have additional, you know, the college degree, or they have additional training or what have you, they can get additional monthly amounts because they have that additional training, and that money comes out of that trust fund, and that trust fund is supported by that amount, Charlie, that you talked about, the other 50%, or there's a 6% limitation. There's another limitation that puts money into that trust fund. And then each year, if they don't need all the money that they've allocated to that trust fund to make those supplemental payments to the firefighters, then that money comes back to us. It's whatever is not used is really what it amounts to. So it's all our money. It's just a matter of how much of it we're going to get back in that second check.
Okay.
That's the way it works.
All right.
So nobody else is using our money. It's just the that supplemental fund. I can't see a scenario here where, I mean, we're in a position to be able to avoid the city having to put money into this plan.
Yeah.
Unless they obviously get rid of the state money program altogether, or they somehow change the rules. But the rules seem to be getting more liberal, not less liberal. I don't see any problem. But I do. I agree with Charlie. I think we're going to be faced with a mounting surplus in there again, and we may be looking at this again in another 5 years.
we're used to the standard. It's going to be less than that.
Less than that, yeah.
All right.
Let's see. Can we stretch it to 12 years?
So you're going to retire?
That's when I'm planning on retiring, 12 years from now. So let the next guy worry about it.
I had one more thing, Charlie. You had sent me a question about a change to the return.
That may be one. Let me tell you what prompted that.
Okay.
I got queried by members of the volunteer organization about the distribution of the excess funds. And one of the things that was bothering people was that there's a provision within the ordinance that says people who left were not vested could come back. Right? So say they had 4 years, mm-hmm. and they left this and had no part of their pension, particularly with respect to the share plan. They'd come back and then could make up a year or whatever it was, and then be eligible for distribution just on the basis of 1 year coming back. My point to you was, since it's in the ordinance and we have to do that, I would like to have added something that says, okay, if you make up the year, you have to give us 2 more years in order to participate in the program. In other words, you can't come back for 1 year, just a piece of the share. So if you come back for the 1 year, yes, we'll let you do that, but you have to give us 2 more years along with that. So that was the question I had, and I didn't know whether we could do that by interpretation. If it comes to the fact that we have to redo the ordinance, then I would say let's take the risk and forget the thing. Because I don't want to change the ordinance. It's my opinion. The board has to decide on that. But can we implement that in some way that does not require us to make a change to the ordinance?
No, I mean, we have to follow what the ordinance says. So.
But in essence, we would be following what the ordinance said. We're just putting another caveat on it.
Well, Charlie, isn't
another caveat is not following the ordinance. You're adding something that isn't there.
Oh, no, I'm allowing them to, we are allowing them to gain additional years to participate, in other words, to get vested, but they have to provide 2 more years in order to gain it. You're probably right, it's not in the court.
But Charlie, the any person that's in that situation would still have to earn the points.
Yeah, for the year.
For that year. So there's still a certain amount of work that has to be done that's not insubstantial.
I had 4 years and walked away and saw that there's this big pot of money here, and all I had to do was put in 1 year to get my share of it. That's no good for us. You're doing that to dig into the pot. And I'm saying, if you're going to do that, then you have to provide us with a couple more years of service.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that a person coming back cold is going to have to still go to all the meetings, go to so many calls. They're actually going to have to earn it.
Yeah.
They still have to go through the process of earning it.
Yeah.
So they may not want to go through all of that.
Administratively, it's a pain in the neck because that person would have to get reassigned by re-put back into the system with the city.
Yeah.
We'd have to give them uniform, we'd have to give them equipment, et cetera, et cetera. I like the idea that
by the time you do that, they're already 6 months
in. By that time, they're 6 months into it, and then everything's going to be taken away from them again. So I like that idea, but I'm not sure to Charlie's question whether or not we can
is it enough of an incentive to the person to say that, well, geez, if I stay another year, I get another this much in the share plan?
I think
That's part of what the share plan should do.
If you were in it last year, or if they knew last year they were trying to get into the initial, share plan distribution or something like that, then that'd be one thing. But in the future, obviously the dollar amounts are going to be substantially less, and the distributions will be less. So,
don't count on it.
Well, you know what I mean. But I'm saying is, if someone's that shady, you really want them in your organization type thing.
No.
And if they earn their time, they earn their time. It is what it is.
I addressed this because it was put to me as a question.
Well, do you
I was looking for a solution, but I don't see it as that big a risk to us, quite
frankly. Here's another question, okay? If they come back, it's like as if they weren't here before, right? They still have to go through an interview process. They have to be accepted by the by the board. They have to be accepted by the organization. If that were the case, could we turn a person down and not have them come in?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you have to bring them back? What if they weren't very good at what they did?
I think we can turn them down. Yeah. I mean, we turn down people who haven't had any experience.
Right. Yes.
We can turn them down.
Sure.
I have my doubts about that. If you had them and they were in your organization 4 years, and you didn't fire them, you didn't terminate them, then they're obviously satisfactory. And if now they come back for the 1 year, what's your basis for saying that they're not qualified? They've done it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I'm just addressing the people that are just coming back for that, just to get the grading and leave again.
Well,
you don't know what their intentions are until
not trying to acquire time that they already put in. I'm talking about people who have 4 years and left. They're not vested, so they get no part of this.
Right.
So they can come back for the 1 year. If somebody's coming back in, say, okay, I'll work the 5 years to get vested, then then we would do it.
But I'm talking about the people that have maybe 1 year left and are coming back just for that 1 year to administratively put us into a spin. And then after that 1 year, they have their 5 years in, they put in for their retirement, and bingo, they're out.
Yeah, but the organization says they can do that.
Yeah. I know, but it's a waste of time. That's what I'm saying.
Then
that's why I liked your idea of tacking on another 2 years of volunteerism in order to get it.
But can you do that without changing
the organization?
Well, I understand. What I'm hearing is that we can't. But it just doesn't seem fair for somebody just to come back to pick up the line. It isn't,
which is why we're trying to address it. Yeah. But the cure is worse than the malady, it looks like.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's something we could do if we may have to make some changes. We update the plan for Internal Revenue Code changes and what have you from time to time. I mean, maybe we don't want to do a standalone ordinance to deal with them. We could do something like that when we're doing something else that we need to do anyway.
The next cleanup.
Yeah, the next cleanup.
I would say, I think if they start knocking on the door and beating it down, then we'll address the issue.
I say, nobody's comfortable. Nobody's comfortable with that.
I think we're fine.
But, under the normal firefighter plan, a paid firefighter plan, if you have a guy who works for 3 years and he leaves, and he leaves his contributions in the plan, and he comes back 3 years later and is rehired, he picks right up where he left off, and he gets the 3 years of service that he had before. So I mean, that's kind of the flavor of what we have in the plan. But that, now you get the share issue. I don't think it's really picking up where you left off as far as getting credited service for the time that you did here before. The real question is, how's the share plan going to be treated? And we could put some language in the share plan, because it already says if you're not vested when you leave, you forfeit your right to the share amount that you had accrued, and that money gets reallocated. It isn't even there.
And the next go-around this year is going to be far more lucrative to the active members than what we're going through right now. Right now, you're 1.5. We've got $1.2 million we're trying to get rid of. But we have 20 retired people. They're not in the picture for the next go-around.
Right.
So it's just for those actors. That number could be stunning if we get to the 1.5 million again, and we bring the distribution level back to maybe 25% of what we're doing now. You know what that does to these numbers? I don't think anybody wants to look at that.
Maybe we'll get a lot of volunteers.
Start recruiting.
All right. Well, anyway. Tim, you got it right.
See you, Tim. Good to see you. I think that's all I've got. I mean, should we let the rest of the trustees know about the kind of the thing we went through with the state as far as a little background?
Oh, yeah, I would do that.
Yeah. Let's see, where do I start this? as you know, we got our share plan all adopted, the city adopted and what have you, and shortly after that, we got a public records request from the attorney that represented the union. Does your full-time people have a union?
Yes.
Yes. So the attorney from the union did a public records request for documentation, minutes, and what have you, of our meetings. And frankly, I had a little concern with that, and thinking, why are they asking for that, all right? And the only thing that I could think is that, this is totally a volunteer pension plan. And I knew we had some
we had some confirmation from the state that we were okay, but I felt like maybe the union was looking to after we did this nice share plan, maybe they're looking to tap into the 175 plan, all right, see what they could do to get into the plan. And so as a result of that, I felt like it was prudent before we distributed all this money is to contact the state and get a confirmation that, you know, hey, we're good, right? We're okay with our volunteer plan. And we initially, and Charlie and Chris and I were really the ones that did this. I did the talking, but they did the worrying. And I did a lot of worrying too, quite frankly. So my concern was that, you know, as a volunteer plan only, that we would, if they really took a close look at it, they would say, hey, no, you can't do that. You've got to have the full-time guys in there too. So that was the issue. But we had a lot of history here. We actually even had some written stuff, letters from the former lady who ran the Division of Retirement, the Police and Fire Bureau, kind of confirming there had been previous questions from one of the full-time firefighters, lieutenant, I can't remember what his name was, but he had, what was it? Evans. And he had apparently contacted and talked with the lady whose name is Trish Shoemaker, talked with Trish about the possibility of the full-time firefighters being put into the plan. And so we had some correspondence, which is kind of unusual, correspondence back from Patricia Shoemaker saying, you all set it up, you had it volunteer only. The city at that time made a decision that they didn't want to have the full-time firefighters in the plan, and so as a result, if at some point the city wanted to consider putting the full-time firefighters into the plan, that could be done, all right? Which kind of formed the basis of what we considered was an opinion from them saying, you're okay with just a volunteer plan, because putting the full-time firefighters in was an option that the city could consider if they wanted to. All right, well, we had a lot of other issues or a lot of other factors, I think, that I pointed out, and I wanted to make sure that we could get a solid position with the state. So I did about a three-page letter that laid out what I just told you, along with some other things. I mean, we've gotten our state money every year. Each year we've reported no full-time firefighters, only volunteers. So it's not like the state didn't know we had an only volunteer plan. And so I laid all this out in a letter, and I sent it to Keith Brinkman, who is at the Division of Retirement. And we could have predicted that they took a while to look at it, but ultimately, he didn't write me a letter. He didn't send me an email. He called me on the phone, and we talked about it. And he said, "We're not going to take any action with regard to the volunteer plan. You're going to be able to continue with your volunteer program." I said, "Well, can you give me a written confirmation of that?" And he told me he would. But we haven't gotten the written confirmation yet. But as soon as I had that conversation with him, I did an email to Charlie and obviously copied Chris, saying what he had told me, that we're good to go going forward based on the facts and circumstances. And that's the point. Right. And I copied him as well. And I said, you know, we could rely on the fact that the state is going to allow the program to continue. And so I sent that to him, and I haven't gotten the written confirmation yet, but I haven't gotten any objection to my email either. And quite frankly, and Doug will probably agree with what I'm saying, we may not get a written confirmation from him. I followed up, by the way, Charlie. I've asked, are we getting our written confirmation? And I haven't gotten a response to that either. But we may not get any written confirmation, but I think at this point, I think we may have as much comfort as we're going to get from the state with regard to this issue. So I think we've pretty well put it to bed.
You feel that should it raise its head again, that we have enough cover to continue?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think my letter
did it.
Yeah, my letter was pretty comprehensive, and I covered any objection that I thought they could raise. I covered, and I don't know how they could have gotten out of it, you know, quite frankly,
without looking quite there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think we're pretty comfortable with where we are right now, and that's obviously why we're in the
process. Any questions?
That's great. So that's it. That's all I've got.
I think we're done, but just let me
Charlie, I just have two quick questions, I guess, if you don't mind.
Right.
I just want to confirm again that because of the share plan component now, that we've gone out and gotten beneficiary forms on all the active people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What we've done is
take that off my list.
We issued those beneficiary forms to people who are in the program now, and now that form is a part of the entrance program to get in for recruitment.
Well, that's good. That's the way it ought to be. Everybody who comes on board, obviously,
yeah, they said they do that right away. Right.
Charlie, is there a beneficiary form for the retirees?
When they apply for benefits, they fill out a beneficiary form.
You did that when you got vested. Excuse me. When you retired, you filled
that
out
the same beneficiary form for the share plan as well.
Yeah.
Because some of us are going to be taking it in 2 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. If something happens to us,
their right. form is there. That's the beneficiary. Is a beneficiary.
So they'll carry on. Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing that you and I touched on a little bit, I just thought I'd bring up here, is about kind of a next project for the board is to put a written investment policy in place. It's actually in the ordinance.
You have a written investment policy. You've adopted the League of Cities policy.
Yeah, but I mean something a little bit more.
Well, you're not going to you may do an investment policy. If you send it to the league, they're not going to do anything with it.
No. But an investment policy, it's part of it's. From the audit perspective, from the audit, it's more of a, it's not a specific, hey, we're going to do this. It's more of, okay, this is what we're going to do to the board to consider what kind of investments we're going to go in. We're going to look at third-party administrators. You know, it's more of a general policy document that says, you know, these are the kinds of things we can invest in as a board that we're allowed to invest in. This is the process the board's going to use to determine who they're going to pick to do their investments. More of a process policy document.
You know, we went through this before. We had this question before. What kind of plan? And that's when we fell back and said, the League of Cities, they are our plan. So,
but the question more is, well, what did the board do? What steps did the board go through to say that the League of Cities is the right?
Yeah.
You know.
Again, as a part of the fiduciary responsibility of the board is to monitor.
Right. And that's becoming more and more of an issue, especially now with all the new accounting stuff. Because specifically, it talks about the board's investment policy, and we don't really have a document that I can say, this is the board. We do for the city. The city has one.
That's it. And that was adopted by the board. You don't really have any choice, because the League of Cities, when you give them your money to invest, they have an investment committee or something that makes the decisions as to who they're going to hire and they monitor it and they do an investment policy for you can see it's for the 50%, 60%, yep. 70% and then they adopt that and they send it out to everybody that they're investing money for and this is you're required to adopt this as your investment policy mm-hmm. But you're right, under the state statute, you're required to have a written investment policy, and this is the document that meets that requirement. Now, I'm not saying you can't do something more, but we're meeting the requirement to have an investment policy by adopting the league's policy.
Yep. But we have the league's investment policy.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I still think what I'd like to do is follow what the city has done. And the city has laid out, okay, we have this investment policy. For the Volunteer Firefighter Pension Board investment policy. This is who is responsible for administering it, the pension board. This is what the pension board does. They interview potential investment advisors. It's general. It's not specific. It doesn't say we can only invest in this or that. And at least then we have a basic document that I can say, yeah, we have it.
I respect your concern on this, and what I would suggest is maybe sometime we can sit down and you frame what it is you think you need for the city. I'd like the city to be comfortable.
Yep.
And the city's going to go to you, not to me.
Yeah. No, I'll definitely pull something like that together.
Yeah.
You know, but it's
why don't you do that, and then we'll take a look at it at the next meeting, and we'll talk to Scott about it. Yeah.
As long as it doesn't conflict with what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
It's not going to say anything in there like, we'll only invest in treasuries. You know, it's not going to say anything like that. It's going to say, you know, that you can invest in anywhere from... usually it's what the state statutes allow you to invest in. Mm-hmm. You know, I know for cities, it has a whole listing of things that are allowed investments. They might even have something in the state statute for the pension board that says these are the things that you can invest in, and it just kind of reiterates that.
Actually, though, just to you may want to the state law is not going to help you much there, because in our ordinance we have broadened the limitations, and essentially in our ordinance, what it says is that the board can invest in anything that it prudently determines it wants to invest in, with the exception that we're not allowed to invest more than 25% in international securities. So that's the only limitation that we have in the plan.
And that's basically what will go in the policy, though.
Yep. Okay, yeah. That's what's in the plan. So look in the plan rather than the statute, because, like I said, we're allowed to deviate from the statute by local law, and that's what we've done.
And that would basically be the statement then about allowable investments. Would be the statement.
Yep.
You know, and it's just.
Any problem with that, board members?
No.
You look at a draft, and if I'm not here when you're talking about it, send me a copy.
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Sure. I'm just trying to clean some of these things up. That's all.
Do you have all this? Because there's a fairly comprehensive the criteria that they have for hiring managers, and there's a whole
that the league uses.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So this may be, if you don't have this, it's their Florida Municipal Pension Trust Fund investment policy. This is the 2009, and it's been amended a couple of times.
Okay, I can pull it.
So this is really maybe take a look at that.
Yeah. Because I don't want to mention anything specific that would handcuff the board, but it's more of like factors the board will consider in hiring an investment advisor. You know, that would go into the policy. History. I don't know. The usual stuff, and you're just documenting that. Yeah, these are the things that we're going to consider when the time comes if we ever hire somebody different. You know, that's that kind of stuff. That's all.
You mean if we hire somebody different other than the League of Cities?
Right. If you guys decided, we don't like the League of Cities.
Let's say we open it up. In other words, we open up to other advisors. What would be our criteria?
Exactly. And
are you okay with this?
Of course, then we revise the investment policy.
Hmm?
Then we'd revise the investment policy, because if you went, remember we interviewed some other consultants before we hired the league.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yep.
So if we decided to move from the league and go to an investment consultant and start using individual managers to manage the money, we'd be more involved in the process, obviously. But then we'd have to have our own written investment policy that we developed, or we developed in connection with the consultant that we hired.
Right.
So that's frankly the normal. I don't want to say normal. That's the majority of the clients that I have do just that. I only have a handful with the league. So the league is here. The league has pretty much been delegated to handle investments. That's pretty much what we've done.
Which is fine. And the policy, it'll just say that the board can do that. The board can hire a third party and give them discretion over, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And within the parameters of an ordinance, which are fairly broad.
Right.
Yeah. At the end of the day, what has been the rate of return? Has it been acceptable and within the realm of what our desired long-term investment numbers are?
Exactly. There'd be a section that would say annually the board will review the actual performance of the investment advisor, and just some verbiage about that.
Mm-hmm. Going forward, based on Bam's comments and what have you, maybe it would be a good idea to put into your report a couple of pages from the league's quarterly report, showing where you're invested, because they do a quarterly report that lists all the managers that you're invested in, what those managers did, compares it to an index in a universe, formally look at that, put it in our agenda, just another couple pages in your report, and look at those every quarter. Even if you've looked at it during the quarter, we could do it at the meetings, and that's probably a good idea to do, if nothing else, to say we're staying on top of it.
We're monitoring it
from a prudency standpoint.
The numbers are right there.
Yeah.
We get them, Peggy said.
Yeah, we don't have to have the whole report. They do a report like this every quarter.
Yeah.
But, particularly in the first couple of pages, there's a page that shows how well
it's kind of the summary page.
The summary page, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that'd probably be a good idea to put that in there and look at that every quarter. Mm-hmm. And then we can say, if somebody says, well, are you guys watching them? You say, oh, yeah, we look at them every quarter at our quarterly meetings. We look and see how they're doing. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'll tell you guys why. No one's asked me for any of this, but we've got a huge election coming up next year here in the city. There'll be a new mayor. There'll be two other council members that are up. The political machines are already in movement for a November 2016 election, and some of them are looking for any reason to pick on anything of any kind, and I'm just looking at little areas where there might be interpretation issues.
Proactive.
Just trying to be proactive about it and say, yeah, we sure do, here it is, yeah. When someone asks, that's
yep.
all.
Yep, I think that's a good idea going forward.
Anything else, Chris?
That was it, thanks.
Okay. Doug?
Yes.
You're going to provide the data to the League of Cities that they need to do whatever it is they have to do, correct?
Data to the League of Cities?
Yeah. They're going to do the distribution on this, are they
yeah.
not?
Oh, he's going to the share plan?
Yeah.
I'm going to provide it to Chris, and I mean, we don't work directly with the League of Cities.
Oh, okay, I thought you did. I thought you sent this data directly to them.
No. We sent everything to the board.
Send it to you.
Yep.
And
as
you
soon
show
as I get
us.
It. Yep.
And then we so is that a, that's not something we have to wait for another quarter to do, right? So you're saying about 2 weeks you'll have that data, which will be sufficient then for us to give to the league, for them to come back to us then. As a matter of fact, Doug, if I understood correctly, you're going to make up a sheet for each individual
yes.
on what they're entitled to.
Yeah.
Is that a part of what you expect to do in the next 2 weeks?
Yes.
Charlie, yes. Well, maybe you're thinking, and maybe rightly so, maybe we should do a motion to authorize the distribution of the money in accordance with the calculations mm-hmm. that are provided by Foster and Foster. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we are there's a sizable amount of money going to leave the plan, and we probably ought to have something in the minutes that shows that the board authorized those payments to be made.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, well, we also have the ordinance that says what we're going to do.
Well, it says we will do it.
On a percentage basis.
Yeah, right, but we also approve retirees.
No,
that's in the ordinance. So I think it'd be a good idea to consider doing a motion to authorize the distribution of the money in accordance with the calculations that are provided by Foster and Foster.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we authorize the distribution of the share plan as stated in the plan itself.
And as calculated by Foster
and
Foster.
As calculated by Foster and Foster.
I'll second that.
Peggy, did you get that?
Yes, I did.
It'll look a lot better when she types it up too. You'll be amazed.
I listen to motions and seconds all the time, and I've got to rewrite them because they're either not understandable or.
If Dan's motion will sound extremely impressive, when
right.
you actually read it.
Peggy gets done with it.
Do we have a second?
Yeah.
Yes.
Vote?
Second. We have a second?
Yes.
Okay.
Bob was a second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Okay.
Charlie, once we get that information back from Doug, I I'll email it to you. I want to probably take a couple of days to digest it all, and you will too, before we send anything to the league. So. Uh-huh. Once we've had a chance to look at it and we're comfortable with it.
The board might want to take a look at that as well. So,
well, you can give it out to everybody, but remember, you all can't discuss it amongst yourselves. So if somebody has an issue with it, something jumps out at you, then you're going to have to call a special meeting to talk about it.
That's
right.
Call a special meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that. Yep.
I
don't want to send anything out to anybody until we have it cleared and what we say we can attest to and back it up. Okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
requests from the union. And that, I think, to finish off your...
Yeah, I still don't know why they asked for that,
whatever it was. We still don't know where we are. But they mitigated the requirement for all of the correspondence going back to the inception of the program between myself and you.
They told us to forget about it.
They told you to forget about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we seem to be all right on that, and that doesn't appear, no matter what they do now, I don't think it can be an obstacle, because we've just about cemented everything that has to be cemented. I don't think we have anything hanging on it.
No, and the other things that they asked for, they didn't even need to ask us for. They're all readily available public documents, you know, either on the city's website, the state's website, you know. I mean, they're just, you know, they just asked for the basics.
Yeah.
Maybe
they had
an idea. Do you know what the reason was?
No. I don't.
We don't?
No. I don't. I've asked.
I mean, you're not allowed to ask why you want it. If somebody makes a public records request, then they don't have to tell you why they want it. So.
No, but I forget it. I was asking somebody, you know what, somewhere along the way, maybe I was talking to the city clerk about it. That if she knew, you know, what they wanted the information for, but we never got any anywhere
else.
Yeah.
Okay. You have documentation of the fact that you've been told that you need to go any further with this by the union. Did you write yourself a letter to that effect?
I can't remember where we got it. Maybe we got an email or something. Debbie in my office was speaking with the city clerk, so they were trying to together, because I think the request was to the city,
okay.
not to me,
okay.
but some of the stuff we would have had, so we were trying to assist in.
Do you know of any documentation we have on that?
That
satisfied their requirements?
The city clerk is required to keep all the documentation relating to any public records
request.
Could
you check that out?
I'll confirm with her, but she would have already put that into the system then. Okay, this one's closed. Here's a copy of the email. But I'll confirm it.
It's not a hanging issue.
No.
It's not a hanging for us anyway, because they didn't really request it of us.
Yeah, once they said they didn't want that, it was closed,
okay.
Basically.
Good enough. John, you have anything you want to add?
Good.
Any questions? Mm-hmm. Dan?
Motion to adjourn.
Doug, do you have anything else that
you
need or...
Well, the motion was shut down.
Nope.
Bob, you're satisfied with where we are with respect to this?
I'll second the motion.
You want that red back?
I think I can remember that. I think I can remember.
She did.
Motion to adjourn. Made. Seconded. Aye. Aye. Thank you.
All right. We'll see everybody in November.